Daf Kuv Zayin Amid Beis, and if you count up from the bottom, we're up to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, approximately 12 lines up, maybe 13 lines up from the bottom, the two dots, and the first one in the line is Modeh. Hatzad litzorach chayav, shalol litzorach potur. Mantana, who is the author of our Mishnah? In other words, which shita does this Mishnah reflect? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Rabbi Shimoni, the Amar Loch Shein Tzich Legufa Potur Leh. So when he captures these shrotzim, and he's not going to take these shrotzim for himself, he has no need for the sheretz, he's just trying to protect himself from being damaged, from being hurt. That's called a Moloch Shein Tzricha Legufa, and according to Rav Shimon Yepotur, and hence we have our Mishnah. Rav Shimon holds that when you try to not achieve something positive, but prevent yourself from something negative, you want to be misalik something from you, like for example in this case of Tzedek Shaloli Nozek, he doesn't want the sheretz to get to him, he has no need for the sheretz, that's called a Molocha Shein Tzricha Legufa. Rabbi Yehuda holds that Moloch Shein Tzricha V'Schayev. Ika Mas Demasni La Aha. Some say that this comment of Rabbi Yehuda Merav, interpreting a Mishnah or a Braisa like Rabbi Shimon, is attached to a different Mishnah, a Mishnah in Edios, in the second parak. The Mishnah has two paragraphs. One paragraph is Hamafis Mursa B'Shabbos. And here he's trying to get out the pus that's building up in a boil on his body. And he's not interested in opening a Pesach. If he's interested in opening a Pesach, he wants the air to come in and out. That's a kind of professional way of opening up a pear. So then he's chayev. That's called Melechas Binyan. And Binyan applies even to a human body. And that's opening of Pesach and Yuvah Bari, which is a sugyan ksubis about Bila Rishona and Daf Vav Amid Beis. But im lahotzim en aleichol, he's interested in getting out the pus, potur. Even though he knows full well that he's going to create a Pesach, but he's not interested in a Pesach. And man tano, on this we have a comment attached to Rabbi Yehuda Merav. Rabbi Shimoni, he's the author of that mission in Edios, the Omer Moloch Shein Tzricha Legufa Potur Aleh. And since he has no need for a Pesach, therefore, it's a Moloch Shein Tzricha Legufa as far as Asiyas HaPesach is concerned. He wants to get the Mugla out. We should keep in mind that in general, in Melech HaShabbos, we say Potur Aval Osur, and that's true for Rabbi Shimon. In this particular case, it could be that Mafis Mursa, and the next case, in the next paragraph in Edios of Tzad Nochosh, is even Mutter. And the reason for that is because B'makom Tzar lo gozu bei Rabbonon. Ika demasli le'aha. Here's a third possibility in which we attach Rabbi Yehuda and Rav's comment about Rabbi Shimon to the next paragraph in the Mishnah in Edios, Hatzad Nochosh B'Shabbos. He's not interested in taking the snake. He doesn't need it for any purpose. And even though he's doing Tzedah, but if he's doing it just to prevent himself from being bitten by the snake, that's called a Molocha Shein Tzricha Legufa. Im Isasik Bo Shelo Yishachena is Potter, that's called Molocha Shein Tzricha Legufa. If, on the other hand, he was interested in capturing the snake, he needs the snake. Lirafua, he gets some sort of a therapeutic benefit from grabbing onto the snake. That makes it into a malacha hatricha legufa. And then he needs the tzedah. Mantana, who is the author of this brisa that would hold him exempt in the case where he's not interested in just protecting himself from being bitten, on Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Rav, Rabbi Shimoni, Om Moloch Shein Tzricha Legufa, Potter Aleha. Now, if the trapper just wants to prevent the snake from biting him, he has no need for the snake itself, that makes it into a Moloch Shein Tzricha Legufa. Had he known that for sure he could run away from the snake, or the snake wouldn't harm him, he wouldn't bother trapping the snake. So that's not the purpose for which trapping is done, in order to take the object, or the animal, I should say, that you want to have accessible to you. You wanted to sell it to a zoo, or use it here in this case for therapeutic purposes. So this would be another application of the shita of Rabbi Shimon, Malach Shein Tzvicha L'Gufa, is part of Avolos in this case, even though there's no Pikuach Nefesh, but we want to save him from Tsar, and therefore it's Patur Mutter. Omar Shmuel. We now have a statement in the name of Shmuel. Hashole Dog Minayam. Now let's mention that it's not clear exactly what the Metzius is over here. He's definitely removing fish from the sea, but it could be the fish is already trapped. He's keeping it at bay in, let's say, a bowl or a net or something inside the water. So there's no Iser Meleches Tzeda, but he is responsible when he removes the fish from the sea for the ultimate death of the fish. And that's Meleches Netilas Neshama. Now, at what point, asks Shmuel, do we say the fish is dead? In other words, up to a certain point, maybe he could throw the fish back to the water and claim the fish will survive. So Shmuel gives us one Simon L'Davar, and Rav Ashi gives us another Simon L'Davar. According to Shmuel, Kevan sheyavesh bo sela, if a certain area around the body of the fish, we'll see exactly what area that is, gets dry, kishir, the width of a sela, which is a coin, a specific coin, is chayev. Then he's chayev mishum netilas neshama, and it means that the animal is dead, the fish is dead, even if you throw it back in the water, there's no chance of it surviving. This is the siman that it definitely will perish. Now, Rav Asi Bar Ovin comes to qualify this statement. Where did you find that part of, which part of the body of the fish became dry like a sela, a sela's width? That's only Bein Snapirov. That's between its fins. If it gets dry somewhere else, then it could still survive, and he can throw it back into the sea, and we could assume that he's not chayev for Meleches Netilas Neshama. So only a dry spot between the fins is a proof, a sure sign that the fish is going to die. Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi now wants to substitute a different siman to determine that the fish is already dead and you can't throw it back in the water. Lo temi yovish mamash el afilu di avad rire. He says here in the Hebrew, yovish ktsas, even though it's not really dry, but nevertheless, zav rir mimenu, somehow the fish is already exuding some sort of a liquidy substance. And this substance is so significant that if he draws his finger, he'll be able to find some of this liquid on his finger. And what is rire? Rire translates as drops of slime. And apparently when the animal, in this case again the fish, it begins to have that slimy, sticky outside surface, then you know that it's already gone. It's passed beyond survival. Omar Mar Bar Hamdure. And that was the name of this Chacham. According to the Seder Adoros, we're not sure if his name was Mar, but he came from someplace called Hamdure. And he said in the name of Shmuel, Hoshit yada lemei behema v'dildel ubar shebemei'eha chayev. If a man stretches out his arm, his hand, into the innards of the animal, the womb of the animal on Shabbos, and he dislocates an embryo that was inside of it, so he loosens it up, and the embryo is no longer attached to its mother, chayev. And the Gemara says, my time of wise ichav. In other words, let's classify this under one of the 39 malachas. So I'm a Rava, Barham Duri Asper Li. I actually got a private lesson from Barham Duri, and he told me, Lav Omer of Sheshes, when I asked him, what malacha are you violating when you dislocate this animal, this embryo, from its body? And he answered me with a statement of Rav Ashi. Didn't Rav Ashi say, Haiman de Toash Kshusa Mehizmi, that if somebody would dislocate a hop from a briar, so we have these kinds of growths that grow not from the ground themselves, but from something that's attached to the ground. So we have these shrubs, in English they're called briars, and he detaches hops from the briars. And in the Hebrew, it's called kshusa or kshos. And these grow on these types of prickly shrubs. And the prickly shrubs, the shrubs themselves, these kotzim, yonek, darkom yakarka. In other words, the zinika from the karka into the shrubs, and from the shrubs into the kshus, into these hops. And in such a case, when he rips out these hops from the shrubs, then mechayev mishum oker dover migidulo. He is dislocating something from its source of gidul, its source of nourishment. What exactly is that? So when something grows somewhere, normally it grows in the ground itself, and if you are oker dover migidulo, and you remove it from the place where it's growing, that is meleches kotzer. That's harvesting, or at least the tolda of harvesting. In this particular case, it's a little bit more complicated because it's not growing directly from the ground. And that's the chiddush of Rav Sheshes, that when he removes these hops from the shrubs, even though he's not oker dover mikarka, nevertheless it's still called meleches kotzer, even without the chibur to the karka, because this is called oker dover migidulo. Now if we go back to the case of the animal, and the embryo in the animal, the makom gidulo of the embryo is inside the animal's womb, and that's where he's dislocating it. And that's called oker dov migidulo, even though we're not talking about something that's mechuber lekarka. So therefore, we're talking about a toldus kotzer. And the truth is that the Yerushalmi holds that even if you pull a fish out of the water, you're chayv from aleches kotzer, because again, you're being mafsik dover migidulo, you're being mafsik the chius. The Ramban says that there's no kotzer unless it's gidule karka. And therefore fish, and now in our case the embryo inside an animal, a balchai, that would not constitute meleches kotzer because it's not gidule min karka. At least in the case of Rav Sheshes, Tolash Kshusa, that could be considered in an indirect way gidule karka because the shrubs are growing in the ground. But not in the case of an animal or a fish. For example, let's say you cut off hairs from your body or nails from your body. That's not kotzer, even though it grows from your body or from the fingers. And the answer is that's not called kotzer because it's not gidulei karka. So therefore, the Ramban wants to reinterpret our Gemara and suggest that our Gemara uses the term oker dov migidulo in a sort of loose term, and what it really means is netilas neshama. Now, this gets into a bunch of problems, because although that would explain why in the case of fish, the Gemara didn't use the term oker dov migidulo, but rather there we're talking clearly about Netilas Neshama, if there's no Tzeda, as we discussed. In the case of Hoshid Yado Lemei Imo, Lemei Behema, then why is that considered Netilas Neshama? Do we consider the embryo as a Neshama? L'chora, the embryo doesn't have a status as an independent Neshama. Where's the Netilas Neshama here? And the Gemara has this equation to the case of removing the kshusa, the hops from hizmi, from these shrubs. Are we going to say that that also is called the tilas neshama? We don't find the tilas neshama by plants. So the Ramban interprets a kind of analogy. When the Gemara speaks about kshusa, and the Gemara quotes Rav Sheshes, that was for an analogy. That you could be chayev for hafsokas chiyus when you stop something living from and detach it from its source of life. You could be chayev, and you see that from the case of kishusa, where he's taking it out of the hizmi, where its life depends upon the hizmi, and there he's chayev for a tolda of kotzer. So too in Balei Chayim, like the fish or the animal, he's also chayev for being oker dov migidulo, not as a malach of kotzer, because it's not gidul karka, but rather as netilas neshama. Now in the case of the ubar, even though the ubar has no neshama unto itself, it depends upon its mother for its neshama. Nevertheless, that's called the tilas neshama. Like, for example, we have chover. Chover means, let's say, he destroys one limb of a body. He's chayv for netilas neshama simply because of that limb. So we can view the ubar as a limb of its mother's body, and it's getting its life from the mother. When you detach it from the mother and you dislocate the embryo, that's called Oker Dov Migidulo. That's Netilas Neshama, no less than Chovel Be'ever Echad Minaguf. Now, just to make life complicated for ourselves, there's a Shitas HaTosvis, not here but elsewhere, that Oker Ubar Mimei Imos Chayev Mishum Gozes. And that's Melechas Gozes. So again, in the case of the fish, he destroys the life of the fish. That clearly is Netilas Neshama, and according to the Ramban, it couldn't be Oker Dov Migidulo as a told of Kotzer, because we're not talking about Gidulei Karka. In the case of Kishusa, that's clearly a told of Kotzer, because we're talking about something that grows, again, the Chiddush Rav Sheshes indirectly, but nevertheless from the Yanika of the Karka. So that's Kotzer. In the middle case, when we talk about Medal del Uber Bimei Imo, here we're talking about a different kind of Oker Dov Migidulo. We're talking about Hefsek Chiyuso, and this is called the Tils Neshama. And even if you'll argue that the Uber doesn't have its own independent Neshama, but nevertheless, it's no different than taking an Aver and cutting it off, destroying an Aver from a body, and Yechai Fishim the Tils Neshama. Now, once we're on the topic of Oker Dov Migidulo, then Homer Abaye, Haiman de Tolash, and now we're turning to Daf Kufches Omen Aleph. We're talking about somebody who detaches a fungus. This is called Pitra. We know it as Pitriot, as like mushrooms. He calls it a min sevach shegadel below shorish bekarka, and it doesn't grow directly from the karka. And where do you find these mushrooms? Where do you find them growing? So in this particular case of Abaye, we're talking about meuna dechatzpa, which literally is from a handle of a pitcher. In Hebrew, it's called tzfas hakli, the outside lip of a utensil. And there's a certain lachus, there's a certain moisture of water on this outside lip of a kli over the course, apparently, of time. and mushrooms will actually grow there. And now, even though it's not mechubra lekarka, but once you detach these mushrooms from makom gidulo, that too is a tolda of meleches kotzer. And that's the chiddushir of Abaye. The Gemara is not happy with this. Masiv Rav Oshia, we have a Mishnah, which we studied earlier, of Hatolesh Tzemach Me'otzitz Nokuv Chayev Sheinu Nokuv Potur. Now, whether or not this flower pot has holes in it, or it doesn't have any holes in it, in any event, there is a yinika that's coming from the ground through the flower pot, and that's what's keeping this tzemach, whatever's growing inside the flower pot, alive. Now, the Mishnah says that if you detach this tzemach that's growing inside the flower pot, it depends. If it's nakuv, then you're chayev for kotzer, because that's called mechubal karka, because of the perforation. But if you're talking about eino nakuv, it's not perforated, it's flat, it's not mechubal karka. But we see clearly that something that's not mechubal karka, despite the fact that it gets yanika from the karka, there's no meleches kotzer. So why do you tell me then in the case of tolesh, of a pitria, that even though it doesn't grow from the karka, nevertheless yichai mishum meleches kotzer? What's the difference, basically, between tolesh me'otzit shein enokur, which the Mishnah says yipotur, which proves that the underlying premise of the Mishnah is that there's no chiyuv for tolesh dover megiduo if it's not mechubal karka, and the case of pitra mi'una dechatzpa, that's growing off the lip of a utensil? And the Gemara answers, it all depends on a concept called derech zriya. It's where do you normally find something growing? Hasam, in the case of an otzit sheinu nakuv, that's lav hainu rebisa. That's not its derech gidul. That's not the makom gidul. And you don't usually plant something inside a closed, shall we say, insulated flower pot. So that's not derech zriya, and therefore you're not chayev for ktsira, because ktsira is the opposite of zriya. Hacha, but here, in the case of pitrios, hainu revisa, that's where you'll find mushrooms. That's the normal way they grow. And therefore, even though it's not mechubal karka, when you detach it from its normal place of derech zriya, derech gidul, then you're going to be chayev. And therefore, if we go back to Amud Beis, on Kuv Zayin, when we had the case of Hizmi, where you detach the hops from the shrubs, even though you might argue that's not mechubal karka, but nevertheless that's called derech gidul, and therefore the oker is chayev. However, the common denominator of all the cases where you chayev for kotzer is that it's makom gidulo, and it's derech gidulo, that's the normal place where you would find something growing. But you're talking about a plant from a flower pot that is totally closed and it has no hole in it, that's not considered its usual place of growth. That's not derech gidul, that's not derech zriya, and therefore you're not chayev for ktsira. Now, we might add the following, that in the case of the pitrios, or the fungi, that we mentioned before, that you remove from the rim of the vessel, or for that matter, the hops, that you remove from the prickly shrubs, or the embryo that dislocated with the mother, these are considered derech gidulam, makom gidulam. That's the primary place where they grow. Not so in the case of an otzitz she'eno nokum. We go on in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that Chayav Yovshe Bershuso Hatsodon Potur Vachol Ben Chayav. So since you have control over these animals, they're in your Rishus, in your domain, that's not called Seida. But on the other hand, if you injure them, then you Chayav Mishum Chovel. Now the Gemara wants to bring a din with regard to writing tefillin and see if we can derive that din from our Mishnah. Om Rav Huna, Kosvin, tefillin, Afal, right? Afal Gav, Afal Gabi, or Shel Or Of Tohar. Which means that the classical case of a parchment of tefillin is an or of a behema or a chaya tahora, and that's derived from psukim. Rav Huna is now teaching us a new innovation that you can write tefillin even on the skins of a kosher bird. And even though Rav Huna only mentions tefillin, this would apply to sifrei Torah, to mezuzahs as well, what we call stam. That if you were to write them on the skin of a bird, then it would be a valid sefer Torah, valid tefillin, and a valid mezuzah. Because even though Rav Huna singles out the example of a mezuzah, of a tefillin, who had been, the same law would apply to svarim and to mezuzahs. Now, as to why Rav Huna therefore mentions, singles out tefillin, that's a discussion in the Achronim. Omer Rav Yosef, Maika Mashmalan, are you teaching me a chiddush, the islay or, that a bird has something which halachically is called an or, and therefore you could write a pair of tefillin on the or, is tnina. In truth, we could derive this from our Mishnah here in Shabbos. It says, Chayav v'of hachovel bahem chayav. That if he wounds a bird, it says explicitly in our Mishnah that he's chayav mishum aleches chovel. And that must be based on the predicate that the oaf has or, and the blood collects under the or, and changes the color of the R. Now, Omale Abaye says, you know why I need Rav Huna, and I cannot rely exclusively on our mission. That alone would not be sufficient. And Tuva Kamashbalan, Rav Huna is making a great insight, a great innovation here. Deimi Masnisanav. I mean, if I only had the Mishnah without the statement of Rav Huna, I would say that even if I grant you that there is a skin for a bird, but nevertheless, Keva de Isbe Nikve, right? There are many, shall we say, holes in the skin of a bird, because those holes have to hold on to the feathers of the bird, and therefore it would not be valid. Lo means it would not be valid for tefillin. That would be our understanding if we only had the Mishnah without Rav Huna. And that's called Hefsek HaKsav, meaning because of these holes in the skin, in the hide of a bird, you could have a hefsek ksav, that from one letter to the other there are different holes. And the Torah says with regard to tefillin, uksav tom, and chachomim interpret that to mean ksiva tama, which means it should be a complete ksiva without any breakages, without any holes in between, without any hefsekos in between. And Kamash Malon, so Rav Huna is telling me a big chiddush, namely that you're allowed to write tefillin on the or of birds, and these nekovim don't passel the ksav. Kedo Amri b'marava, like we learned in Eretz Yisrael, and they formulated the following principle there, that called nekev, any small hole that is so small shadio overis olav, that when you pass the ink over these holes, then you can get a continuous ink. Well, I guess part of the ink will fall into the holes, but the dio goes from side to side. Is then in such a case, eina os nireis kechaluka l'shtayim, it doesn't appear to the eye that there's anything that breaks up and wedges this letter in the middle to break up the letter, right? So that's not called Nireis Kechaluka L'Shtayim. So there's no os that's Nireis Kechaluka L'Shtayim is Einu Nekev. That doesn't passel the tefillin. So in the case of the Nekovim of the Or of the Oaf, those are relatively small, and as a result, when you pass the ink over these holes, the ink will actually continue without any breakage, and therefore it's kosher. Now the Gemara objects to Rav Huna Meisve Rav Zera. Rav Zera asks the following question. There's, by the way, a Girsa issue about Meisve. It could be it's Masav. Masav means he asks a kasha. Meisve is a word that is left exclusively for a stira. Actually, he is bringing a stira from a price. Let's see, why would we leave out the meisve here? Ah, I see. Meisve is very often in the plural. And here it's only Rav Zera in the singular. And therefore, we should say masiv. Masiv is he asked, as opposed to they asked. And he has a brisa. The brisa is addressing the episode of what's called Olas Ha'of at the beginning of Sefer Vayikra. And it says over there, V'shisa oso b'knafav. Okay, and we're talking about the feathers of a bird, with regard to the bird Ola, the Ola Sa'of. So what does this mean? It means that the Torah mandates the Kohen to be Korea the Or, and this is Megabo on the outside of the wings of the bird, and the wings themselves are still attached to the bird. And basically, the Akhtorah here of this Ola Sa'of is together with the feathers. The feathers are not removed. And I might think that this is the way to do it. So the Torah says, L'hachshir sa'or l'mizbeach. So according to the Braisa, this B'knafav is telling me that the oaf, the olas oaf in this case, is kosher l'mizbeach, and he can be makter the or, even though, and while the notzotz are still connected to the or. He doesn't have to remove the feathers, and that stands in contrast to what's called olas behema. In the case of olas behema, you actually have to do a hafshata on the or, and the reason for that is that or behema is posel mizbeach. In olas behema, the Torah says also the beginning of Vayikra v'fshit es ha'ola, which means hafshat, you have to remove the skin of the animal in order for the olas behema to be brought on the mizbeach. And the Braisa tells us here that olas ha'of is kosher. If you're going to tell me that the or of an oaf is considered or, so then hechi marbile kra, how is it possible for this price to derive any conclusions from the pasuk when the pasuk says biknafav? I mean, the or of a korban ola should be removed and it should not be brought on the mizbeach. And where do you see a ribui in this pasuk that could be marked here or on the mizbeach? The pasuk only says biknafav. So Gemara answers Amalei Abaye. Really, in truth, the or of an oaf is called or. And nevertheless, Rachmana Rabye, the Torah allows you to bring this or onto the mizbeach, even though it's or. So it's an exception to the rule that we formulated based on the parsha in Olas Behema, Vehivshit Es Ha'or. Here it's not Vehivshit Es Ha'or, but rather Lerabos Es Ha'or. And we need a pasuk to be marbe that the bird's skin is considered R. Just 1 second, let's see. He says, Amalei Abayli, Olam Or Shal Of. So let's go over the Kasha one more time, just make sure we have this. Esal Kedat, if you're going to tell me that the R of an Of is an R, Hechi Marbi Le Kra. Okay, what is this language here? Just 1 second. Hechi Marbi Le Kra. Why don't I find this here? Hechi Marbi Le Kra. I think I skipped a little bit. Okay, fine. Is Hechi Marbi Le Kra? How could there be a ribu? The crates at Marbewa Kra Laktilum is Bechre Ora Olatzar Hefshet Vieno Karev Alam is Beach. Let's see if we can figure out the Gemara's Kashi, so then we'll get a better a grasp on the Gemara's answer. Is he says, if we classify the bird skin as R, it's a hide, then lechora it should have to be removed. He writes a yesh lahavin in the footnote. He says, madua hiksha kein Rabbi Zera al Rav Huna Velo al Mishnah Seni Shekasibasha Ofos Yeshlem Or. So the Marsha says that al Mishnah Lokasha came in Sheshlomar Shaaf Shenechshav Orom Ke Orlinian Shabbos Lok Peter Torah Leinian Akravaso. Okay, now the Gemara answers Amalei Abaye Orhu for Rabbana Rabbi. So don't think that the fact that the R is kosher l'mizbeach proves that it's not R based on the principle that you derive from olas behema, but rather the Torah is telling us a chiddush here that olas ha'of is different than olas behema, and despite the fact that you have an R, you are it's kosher l'mizbeach. Now the Gemara has a slightly different version of Rabbi Zera, and here Rabbi Zera was not asking a kasha with the teretz on Rav Huna, but rather he was coming to support Rav Huna from the get-go. Ika diamri, Omar Rabbi Zera afana nami tnina. I'm going to quote a brisa to support Rav Huna. The brisa says biknafav le rabos es haor iamit bishlema orhu hainu scroller rebuye. Why do we need an extra pasuk to be machshir the or of an oaf unless it is an or? And it would have been Havamina to equate it to Ola's Behema, where the Torah says that the R has to be removed before you put the Ola on the Mizbeach. Lav Orhu. But if you're going to say that the Oaf doesn't have an R, which would have repercussions as far as Ksivas Stam is concerned, is Amayitzra Krola Rebuye. Why don't you say Rebuy if you're not even dealing with an R? Amalei Abaye, Abaye rejects this proof. Liolam Emelech, I can tell you Lav Orhu. And if you'll ask me, well, if it's not Or, why would I have a Havamina to exclude it, to disqualify it? Nevertheless, it's true. I need Salka Daitachamina, I would have thought. They came into Ispe, Pirtse, Mois. We have a loch in Mizbeach that we don't bring something that's repugnant, that's disgusting onto Mizbeach. And in this case, the Or of a bird is full of nekavim, and therefore we would say that it's mos l'mizbeach. Okay, then that is called repulsive. Yeah, that's what we said. Okay, kamash balon that it goes on to the mizbeach and it's not considered mos. Fine. Boy, mine mar brei de Ravina me Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak. So again, we're talking about writing Sefer Torah on the R, but not here of a bird, but rather of a fish. Ma'o lichtov tefillin al gabi or shel dog tar, a kosher fish. Amolei im yovel yovi yomar. It means that, we'll know the answer to your question when Eliyahu HaNavi comes to give us an answer. So the Gemara asks, "My, what did he mean when he said, Im Yovo Eliyahu V'yomar? We don't rely on Eliyahu. Ein Novi Rasha L'chadish Dover Mi'ato Elo B'Shamayim Hi." So Eliyahu is not going to be able to teach us something about Issa V'Heter. So what does it mean, Eliyahu? Does it mean Eliyahu B'Toras Novi? That's outside the parameters and the authority of Nevuah. So Gemara says, Ilema, if we're going to say that Eliyahu is not going to teach us Issa V'Heter, he's only just going to reveal to us what the actual reality is, the Metzius, and he's going to tell us either Islay or either Leslay are, whether this dog, kosher dog, has an R or doesn't have an R. The answer is Hochazinon, the Islay R. I mean, just open up your eyes, you'll see the reality, and a dog has R. And its R is thick enough to consider it mamoshes. It is a reality of an R. Viod, and furthermore, we have another problem that we want to raise with Rav Nachman's response here about the Yovel Eliyahu V'Yomar. Disnan, we have a Mishnah in Masechet Kelim in the 10th perek of Kelim. And he made kelim from atzomos hadog v'oro, either from the bones of the fish or the skins of the fish. He was able to manufacture a utensil. Is then matzilin b'ol ames, that if there's something inside this utensil, and the utensil is inside the oel with a corpse in the same oel, then we have a loch of tzomid pasil, that if there's a closure on the kli that's very tight, then there's no kabbal's tumah as far as that which is inside the kli. And that's called a chatzitza bifnei tumah. So the tzomid pasil on top of this utensil creates a barrier, a chatzitza, from the tumah, and therefore whatever's inside this kli remains tar. Now we see clearly that the R, it says R, that he made a utensil out of R of a dog, and it's considered R, and therefore it's not makabel tuma kibsaro. So now we have to go back and ask ourselves, what's im yovel Eliyahu? What was Rav Nachman's response? El im yovel Eliyahu v'yomar, I poska zuam amine, I lo poska zuam amine. This is what we're going to have to hear from Eliyahu, whether or not the stench has departed from it. And what that means is we need Eliyahu to tell us whether the hide of a fish ceases to stink after it has been tanned. Because that's a suffix b'mitzius, and Eliyahu could be machri on that, and we'll know whether you're allowed to write tefillin on the hide, on the skin of a fish. Okay, that's what he says. The Ran says that although we could observe this ourselves, but maybe the word zuama here refers to a state of spiritual impurity. I don't know. That's a little bit way out. In any event, when you make kelim out of atzomos of a dog, then it's not makabel tuma, and therefore could be chotzeitz bifnei atuma, and that's a sugyan chulin on daf chaf hey amid beis kli etzem. A keli that's made from atzomos is included in the parsha b'midbar lamidav v'chol maisa izim l'rabos dover shebo mina izim kagon kelim asuyim mikarnayim otlafayim. So that's only in the case of Izim or other behemos for chayos, but in the case of ofos for dogim, that's not so. So the R of a dog is not makabel tuma, and that's derived actually in Torah's Kodim for what it says in Parshas Shmini, Vayikra Yud Aleph. It says, O beged, O R, ma beged, nasa midovra gadol bin ha'aretz, which is tzemer, upishtin, is af R, min ha'gadol ba'aretz, my dog him shenem gedalim ba'aretz. And then we have a rule that anything that's not makabel tuma is chotzitz mifnei atuma, and therefore the kelim made of these atzomos of a dog or the or of a dog are chotzitz mifnei atuma. Now the Ran asks Akasha here. He says, "Anu roim in poska zuamos olo." What are we asking Eliyahu? He says that there's a more spiritual element here, as we indicated earlier, that the Nachash, when it had a relationship with Chava, is Hitel Bazuama, and that's going to have an impact on all the creatures in the world. However, at Maimed Har Sinai, Paska Zuamasam, but Dogim were not at Har Sinai. And therefore, we have to ask Eliyahu, do we have halacha here, Paska Zuamasam, with regard to fish? The Gemara now quotes a story here, and that will help us clarify the issue regarding writing tefillin on or of kosher animals. And it's got to be a kosher animal. Shmuel v'karna v'yasve aguda de nahar malka. They were sitting on the Sfas Nahar Hamelech, that was the name of this river, and they were sitting on the shores of the river. A royal river, we'll call it. Maybe it was called a royal river because it's the Euphrates, which is the king of four rivers that are mentioned in Bereishis. But in any event, Chazinu, they saw Lemaya, that the water, to call Dolu V'Achire, that the water was rising, and it was very, very lively. Im Galim, he says, with many waves. And this was something like spectacular because there was no water, there was no wind. Not only that, they saw that the water was akurim, that's what it says, akire, which is turbid water, kind of, you know, full of, you know, the soil and so on, not clear, pure water. A great man is coming from Eretz Yisrael, and he has a some sort of a sickness in his stomach, and this means literally that the water is rising up to greet him. So the mayim is climbing up. It makes a machitza around him. Shelo yiru giluyav kshenifne al dofne asfina. I guess he's going to have to eliminate himself because of his stomach problems in the boat, and that's going to be humiliating. So therefore, the water is climbing up to create a machitza around him. And again, this is all because Shmuel saw that there's no wind, and yet there were waves of this nar that are lifting up the waters. So Shmuel understood that this is for the covered of some sort of Adam Gadol, and the water is rising to greet him. So he says that this great man was suffering from stomach ailments. He had to relieve himself over the sides of the boat, and the waves rose to conceal his nakedness or to clean him. And therefore the water was churning wildly as a mark of empathy for the man's suffering, whose innards were also churning. Okay. Zeal Tehile Akankane, which, if you translate literally, it means go and sniff his keg, a bottle of wine, and try to figure out if his wine has turned sour. Now, literally, this translates to try to figure out if he's a chacham or he's not a chacham. Now, that's a little bit strange, because obviously he knew he was an Adam Gadol because the waters were rising for him. But nevertheless, that doesn't mean he's necessarily a gadol b'Torah. He might be a gadol b'maisim, and he's having a miracle because of the schus of his maisim. Azel ashkeche l'rav. And Karna went and he found out that who was it that was on this boat. It was none other than Rav. Omalei Karna turns to Rav and he says to him, Minayin shen kosvin tefillin, Ella al gabi or behemat meya tahora. How do we know that the hides that are kosher for parchment for writing tefillin have to come from a kosher animal and not the hides of a non-kosher animal? Omale, Rav said to him, "Dichsiv, it says with regard to tefillin, Leman tia Torah Hashem beficha." That's in Shmos Perek Yud Gimel with regard to tefillin. And we should darshan min amuter beficha, only from something that you're allowed to eat. Now Karna asks another question to Rav. He says, minayin ledom, how do we know the dam nida, which is metame, is only kshu adom? But if it's not red, it's not metame. And this is based on a Mishnah nida, chamisha minei domim tmeim beisha, v'kulam mishum sheim adumim. Now even though the Mishnah there mentions black, but the Gemara says that black is adom. Is Adom, is actually red, El Shaloka. So the Shachar is Adom, then when it's Nekam and Aguf, it turns black. And Rav gives him the answer. And he says, Shenemar, Vayir'u, this is in Melachim Beis, Vayir'u Moav Mineged Es Hamayim Adumim Kayam. The Moabites saw the water from afar as it appeared red like blood. Okay. So you see that the color of blood is red. It's got to be red in order to be called blood. Now Karn asks him another question. Where do we see that in the Torah circumcision is from that organ? Nemar Khan, it says in Mila, in Vayikra Yud Beis, Yimol Bsar or Lasso, V'nemar Lahalon, in the Parsha of Orla, it says that you, if you plant something new, V'araltem or Lasso, Ma Lahalon, just like in the case of Orla, when you plant it, it's called or Lasso, as a Dorosh Ose Pri, because this tree will produce fruit, is Afkan Dorosh Ose Pri. Okay, now, it's a little bit strange to me that Karna didn't know that the word Orla in the Pasuk of Mila is referring to the male member. I don't know. In any event, Karna now has a kash on Rav. Ema libo. In other words, maybe the word Orla is a reference to the lev. Dechsiv, it says, Umaltem es Orlas levavchem. O Ema Ozno, maybe the word Orla, this actually answers my question. Maybe the word Orla is referring to the Orla Sa'ozen Dechsiv Hine Arela Oznam, Pasuk in Yirmia. So let's assume that the Orla of Mila is either Orla Saleva or Orla Sa'ozen. And again, I'm not sure why Karna is bothered by this one. It seems that Rav has already given him the answer to this question because of the equation between Mila and Netia. And he says, Donim Orloso Tama, Me Orloso Tama, Vein Domin Orloso Tama, Me Orloso Sheena Tama. Ah, I see. In other words, you're telling me that Orla in the Parsha of Mila should be equated with Orla in the Parsha of Yaraltem or Losos Pirio, and therefore you know it's a Dovah Shel Sepri. Maybe I should have another equation, another Gzer Shava, and instead let's equate the word Orla in the Parsha of Mila with Orla in Orlas Halev or Orlas or Orlas HaOzen. And the answer is that we have a concept called Orla Tama, which means that Shlema Biosiosa. In other words, it says explicitly in the word Orla So, Orla Shalo. So when it says Arlas Levav or Orlas Oznam, it doesn't say Orla So. But both in the Parsha of Mila, where it says Yimo Bsar Orla So, and in the Parsha of Orla, it says V'araltem Orla So, that's called Orla Tama. And that makes it more appropriate for a gzera shava. Omer le. Now it seems that Rav turns to Karna. He says to him, Mash Mecha, what's your name? So he says, Karna. Omer le, Rav says to him, Yehe Rava de Tepukle Karna Be'ene. Yehi Ratzon Shetetzelo Le Karna Keren Ba'ayin. And this is almost like a little bit of a disparaging sentence, because Haven Rav Shekarna Bo Lebodko VeHikpid Olav. You know, his Rav was makpid on Karna because he felt that Karna was testing him. Well, let me just read to you a note here in the name of the Chazan Ish. Why did Rav, you know, give this kind of a klola to Karna? Because Rav thought that in Bavel they know who he is, they recognize him, they know he's a Gadol Ador, and he's a Rav Muvhok, and there's a certain zilzul here in the Kavod HaTorah to test him out. And Rav was afraid that if he says nothing, then Tarbe Azuva BeKavod HaTorah BeKerev Yisrael, that's going to somehow intensify this phenomenon in Israel of what he calls Azuva BeKavod HaTorah, that people are not careful about Kavod HaTorah. So let me just read to you in summary when Rav asks Karna, what's your name? And Karna says his name is Karna. Rav cursed him and said maybe it should be the will of heaven that a horn will emerge in his eye. And that would be a cataract that would form in his eye, which he describes as a karna, kind of a horn. A horn is usually like something that you fight with. It's an antagonist, and here there's a fleshy growth in your eye, or some sort of cataract in your eye. And the Gemara in Bava Basra tells us that, in fact, a horn did grow in Karna's eye as a result of this curse. Okay, fine. Now, the Hagos Rav Yaakov Emden adds another little bit of element into the equation here as to why Rav was makpid on Karna. And he says because Rav was in a state of pain, he had serious problems, he needed to relieve himself, and Karna was not letting him do so. He was like holding him up. And according to Rav Yaakov Emden, Rav was not accountable. He can't be held accountable for what he does when he's in a state of pain. Lesof, the Gemara says that eventually Eile Shmuel Abese, Shmuel took Rav into his house. Ochle Nahama, he fed him some sort of bread. What kind of bread? Disare, Saorim, which means barley bread. And Shmuel was a doctor, and he felt that to relieve Rav's stomach problems, he should give him barley bread. And maybe it's a kind of a laxative, which would clean out his stomach. Also, he gave him kasa deharsana, which is a kind of fried fish that's made with fat and flour. And this also is helpful for his stomach ailments. The ashke shikra, and he gave him beer to drink. I didn't know that beer was good for your stomach. Anyway, velo achvile. However, he did not show him the beis hakise, because he wanted Rav to become a diuretic. And Yisrachech kol hazevel shebemei v'yisrape. This would relieve Rav of anything that was wrong inside his kishkis. He had to, you know, it's like sometimes they give you laxatives and so forth to clean out your stomach. Layit Rav Omar Man de Mitzaron Lo Lukmi Le Bone. He who caused me anguish should not have children. V'chein Hava. Shmuel did not have any boys, any male sons. He only had female sons. So this was Shmuel's curse. Now, it's a strange kind of situation because Shmuel was seeking out the best cure for Rav. Rav didn't know that this treatment was really intended as a cure. Later on, he found out that Shmuel was trying to cure him, but nevertheless his curse was fulfilled. And Rav accorded Shmuel the respect due to a great scholar, even though Rav was in fact a greater scholar than Shmuel. And this teaches us that even though Rav lo yoda sheshmuel hiskavi lerfuas of a choshev sherotza letzara leficha kililo, and even lachar shenodil Rav leshmuel shall also came lereposo hoya Rav machabi leshmuel mishum shekililo, this was kind of like a way of pacifying Shmuel, that he gave Shmuel so much covet. And this is all, this entire story about Rav is based on a principle which is that the curse of a chacham, of a tzaddik, even if it was made in error, inevitably comes true. Like, for example, in the case of Yaakov, Rachel died without even knowing that he was cursing, that Yaakov was cursing Rachel, because she had stolen the trophim of her father. Now, one of the various questions that was raised by Karna is really dependent upon a big debate. And that is that the question of where is the source for Mila, that Mila is performed in that place. Kitanoi minai lemila sheba oso makom, that circumcision has to take place in the male organ. Nemar kan or loso, v'nemar lahalan or loso, again in the case of orla fruit trees. And it says that the use of the word in both cases gives us a gzeres shav. Mala halan dover shol sepri, afkan dover shol sepri, divrei Rav Yoshia. Rabbi Nosson omer, eidot tzorech. I don't need this gzeres shav. Hareyu omer, because the pasuk says in Bereishis, the orel zocher lo yimol es bisar or loso, asher lo yimol es psar or loso. And we're going to derive from that pasuk mokom shenikar bein zachrus linakfus. It says orel zocher, and the Torah emphasizes Zohar to tell us that circumcision is performed in that part of the body where we can distinguish between a male and a female. In the previous pasuk, it says, Himolachem kol Zohar. So why did the Torah have to repeat itself and say Orel Zohar? And the answer is, it's coming to teach us where the place of Mila is. Now, getting back to the Braisa, that tefillin has to be made from kosher animals. Tanur Rabbanon kosvin tefillin al gabi or behema tahora, v'al gabi or chaya tahora, v'gabi or nevel sutrefus shelohen. What happens if a kosher species, an animal, dies without shechita, or it cannot be shechta because sutrefa? You could still write the tefillin on that or, as long as it's the or of a behema species is tahora. Then it says nichrachos b'siaram, which means that the hides of nevelos or trefos of these species are also appropriate for tefillin, and the tefillin are wrapped in their hair. So you have different parchments, cloth of tefillin, and they have to be wrapped in hair of a kosher species before we insert them into their different compartments. Now, how do we know that the nevela is okay? And the answer is, it says, beficha min amuta beficha. Tefillin have to be manufactured from that which is permissible into your mouth. So the question is, what about nevela? Nevela is also. So we'll come back to that later. Then the Brisa goes on to say, v'halach l'moshe misinai, shatfilin nichrochos b'si'orah. That this halacha, that each parchment of tefillin, before you put it into its respective bias, has to be wrapped in hair, is a halacha l'moshe misinai, v'nis paros begidon. And they are sewed with the sinews of these kosher species. Now, the last two dinim here in this brisa seem to be halacha l'moshe misinai. The first din, namely that the cloth itself, or, for example, the batim, right, that has to be from a kosher animal. That's not derived from halacha l'moshe misinai. That's derived from the pasuk min amuta b'ficha. Now, how do we know that we need the R for the parchment? It has to come from Bema Tahora. Zu Sheila Shal Baitosi Echad. And keep in mind that the Baitosim were those who objected to the Torah. And this particular Baitosi, which is also called a Tzduki, I mean, there are differences, but for our purposes, they don't believe in Torah Shebal Peh. They were Talmidim of Tzadok Ubaitos, who were in turn Talmidim of Antignos Ichsocho, who said in the Mishnah Al Tiyu Bavonim, Kavonim Amisham Shem Sarav Al Manas Kal Pras, and you should be Al Shalom Manas Pras, and the Talmidim got a. It's a whole story how they went off to Derech. Anyway, these are Talmidim called Stukim and Baitusim. And he asks Rabbi Yeshua Hagarsi. And it's called Garsi because he comes from a place that's called Garsi. Or perhaps he was a Tochein Grisim. Anyway, he asked him, Minayin Shein Kosin Tefillin Al Or Behemet Meah. So Rabbi Yeshua answers him, Dechsiv, Laman Tia Torah Hashem Beficha, Bedover Amuta Beficha. So the Baitusi asks him, Ela Meata, Al Gabi Or Nevelos Utrefos Al Yikosvu. What about an animal, even if it was a kosher species that died without shechita? That's also bachila. Amalo, Rabbi Yeshua responded, Em shalacham mashal l'madov v'domeh. Let me give you a metaphor. L'shnei b'nei odom sh'nischayvu harigal amalchus. Two people were condemned to death. Echad harogo melech. One was actually put to death by the king. The other one was not put to death by the king, but harogo ispekotelitor. That's called the Sara Tabochim. Ezem em Meshubach. Havi Omer Zesha Harogo Melech. So there was a chief executioner, and who on is superior? The one that was executed by the king himself. He's superior. So this is going to demonstrate that Nevelos and Trefos, which die at the hand of God, are superior to ritually slaughtered animals who die at the hand of man. Therefore, the ritually slaughtered animals may be used for tefillin, and Nevelos and Trefos may be used all the more so with a kal v'chomer, because if, in the case of a kosher animal, was shechted by a human being, which is in the parable that's similar to the chief executioner, and yet it's kosher for tefillin, then how much more so in the case of an animal that dies naturally without shechita, that means through the hand of heaven, which is like the case of the melech, and that's superior. Elameata, so the Baitusi asks him, Yeochlu. I mean, based on your logic, maybe we should be able to eat Nevelis and Trefus if they're more Choshev. Omalei HaTorah Omra, the Torah says explicitly, Lo Sochlu called Nevela. Viad Amr Yeochlu. Amalo Kolos. So the Baitusi actually was impressed, and he said, Tam Ze Tam Meshubach. And he really said, well said. And this leads us to the Mishnah at the bottom of Kuf Ches Amud Aleph. So we'll just try to get through the Mishnah. Ein Osim Hilmi. Hilmi is a kind of a brine that's made with mei melach and a very, shall we say, generous amount of mei melach. And we're not allowed to do this on Shabbos. That looks like what's called ma'abed, meleches me'abed. And when we talk about pickling and preserving foods with a great deal of brine that has a lot of salt in it, it seems like he's making some sort of ma'abed. He's some sort of like a tanning process. And in the note here, he quotes a sheet of the Rishonim that Osu laharbos harbe meimelach kefisha osim lekefishas yirokos kedei shiskayim zman rav shekasha nosein meimelach liskayim areze doma leibud or shamelach mekaimo. Just like if you have hides, in the process of tanning the hides you add salt in order to give it a preservation, long life. And ibud or is one of the 39 malachas here too. He wants to add the salt to give long life to these vegetables. That's called dumya. It's a little bit similar to ibud or. Now, Rava himself says later on earlier actually, he said that ein ibud be ochlin. And therefore, if you salt meat in order to preserve it for a long time, he's not chayv mishum ma'abed, but nevertheless, it's also min rabbanon. However, there is another possibility here, and that is that the reason why this is forbidden is maybe because he's preparing on Shabbos for after Shabbos. And now we turn to the Omud, and aval osu es mea melech, if you're using a limited amount of salt, and you're preparing, for example, salt water, then that's not called brine, and therefore it's mut. V'tovel behem pito, and he can dip his bread into it. V'nosein l'tocha tavshil, and he can add it to cooked food. Omer Rav Yosi, valohu hilmi bein meruba bein muot. This brine, whether it's large quantity or small quantity, then if it's hilmi, he says, klomar, im osolasos hilmi, if you tell me that you're not allowed to prepare this hilmi on Shabbos because of the brine, the salt, etc., and it's because it's meruba, it's got a very serious, significant volume of salt, is then we should already prohibit it, even if mei melech mu'atim. And if, on the other hand, mei melech mu'atim, as we saw in the case of mei melech, is mutter, then we should go and we should be matir, even merubim. That's the shita of Rabbi Yossi. The Gemara is going to clarify whether Rabbi Yossi is coming to be machmir and to aser mei melech mu'atim, or he's coming to be mekil, and he wants to be mekil even the merubim. V'elu hein mei melech hamutarim. But rather, Rabbi Yossi says that the following would be a kind of salt water that we could permit, and that is no saint shemen lechatchila letoch hamayim. In other words, first mix the oil with the water before you mix in the salt. O no saint shemen letoch hamelach. Or if you'd like, you can add the oil into the salt before he adds the water. And what's going to happen in these situations is that the shemen, the oil, is ma'akeves hamelech milis ariv ma'mayim. The oil holds back the mixture of the salt with the water, and in effect, the oil in its mixture with the salt is going to weaken the power of the melach, of the salt. And ein hay mel melach, that's not considered strong may melach, that could be confused with ma'abe. So basically, what Rabbi Yossi is advocating is that we have to change the process of preparing this may melach, this salt water, in such a way that by adding the oil to the water and then adding the salt, or adding the oil to the salt and then the water, the oil is going to inhibit the process of mixing properly salt with water, weakening the potency of this solution. But to mix the salt and the water first, even if he intends to add oil afterwards, the initial act already resembles the labor of tanning of ma'abid, and it's prohibited. Okay, then we'll stop here. Three lines down from the top of Daf Kuf Ches Omid Beis, and Belinetta will pick this up tomorrow.